Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Now, it's time for Fitzy and Shime with Nick Fitzy Stevens and Chris Shime on WEEI.
Contest 80-72, while judges Lawrence Cole and Jesse Reyes see it 79-73, declaring your winner by unanimous decision, Jake Elgallo-Paul!
Shame on me, shame on you. Shame on anyone who, for but a single fleeting second, for one shining moment, thought that this quote-unquote fight of the century would be on the up and up, would be on the level, and would be worth our... Oh, sorry, I was just buffering there for a second. Would be worth... would be worth our time. What a cataclysmic waste of time. What an unbelievable coup for the people of Netflix. And yeah, with all due respect, later on, we will put some love on the name of the other Drake, the one who is soon to be the king of New England. But it is hilarious to see the musician slash music impresario known as Drake lose $400,000 actually betting on Mike Tyson in what was a complete sham of a fight, entertainment spectacle, and Friday night shine.
Yeah, the 70% of people in America who bet on Mike Tyson, silly, silly mistake. Like, this had Jake Paul by decision written all over it.
Everybody was saying that all week long. Like, what do you think about the fight? It's going to be Paul and eight.
And then yet everybody bet on Tyson.
Why? Okay, so you're the betting guy at the station.
Mm-hmm.
Did people do that just purely out of emotion? I feel like people want
part of it.
People wanted to see Kid Dynamite come back. And what they saw was bare-ass dynamite last night on international television with Mike Tyson just baring cheeks like a lazy gladiator or like a dad who had to answer the door but forgot to put on his robe. Unbelievable. I think people wanted to see the thunder, the sound, and the fury of vintage Tyson from 30-some-odd years ago come back. And instead... They got a 58-year-old man who's in really good shape, but has almost 60-year-old knees, has a battered, bruised body, isn't all completely there, not to say that he ever was much more some odd decades back when he was in his quote-unquote prime. And then you have a 27-year-old who is long, lanky, but buff, beefed up and fit and ready for the challenge. This isn't to say that Jake Paul is some sort of great boxer or, you know, Muhammad Ali 2.0. But to think that Mike Tyson, everyone just wanted to see him connect on that one punch. Everyone wanted, you know, because Jake Paul can be kind of douchey, to say the least. All right, a little more than kind of. Okay, he's a Paul brother, so everyone wants to see him. Everyone wants to see somebody connect a roundhouse on him. But, I mean, it was just, Tyson made no effort. I don't even know if he could make an effort. And the fight before them, was that a 10-rounder between those two, the Irish woman and the...
One of those ladies was bleeding like crazy.
Riley and Serrano. Holy smokes, that was the best fight I've watched in years. What an awesome throwdown that was.
Yeah, that was awesome. And then leading into kind of just a disappointing fight. Like, it's just, you wanted even just more entertainment, right? And I think that's what especially Logan Paul has done, being part of the WWE. Like, he brings more entertainment factor. And that's kind of what you wanted out of Jake Paul, Mike Tyson, and you just... you didn't get that. And it was just, I mean, Tyson's 58, he can't move, and you hoped that maybe he would connect with just one of those punches and just knock Jake Paul's lights out. But, I mean, they want to continue doing these Jake Paul fights famous people series, and if he gets his lights knocked out, they're not going to be able to continue doing that. So,
I'm the stupidest person in the history of boxing. I have to be.
Yeah, that's probably not accurate.
So I got to say, though, the one person that won last night, and good afternoon, everyone. It is the Fitzy and Shine program. It's FNS on a Saturday afternoon. Another beautiful Saturday afternoon in sunshine-soaked, yet drought-addled, red-flag-warned New England once again. We'll be with you until 3 o'clock, at which point we will throw it to coverage of Boston College Eagles football. You can holler at us, 617-779-7937. That's your number. The lines will be open all day for you, the good people of WEEI New England and Boston Sports Nation. The text line 37937, as monitored and manned by producer extraordinaire Joe Braverman. And of course, the socials. We got at Shime Time. We are on at WEEI. And people know me as at Fitzy GFY. I will say the real winner of the night, Shime, social media. Holy smokes. Yeah. You know, I don't care if you're a Threads guy. I don't care if you've decided to flee to Blue Sky. Or if you still remain on the Twix platform, wherever you choose to share your thoughts, Twitter was on, like social media in general last night was on an absolute heater with people making jokes about Mike Tyson's next opponent, his bare ass, Jake Paul, who he's going to fight.
Who did it better, Mike Tyson or Derrick Henry with the bare ass?
Jake Paul challenges Jimmy Carter to a boxing match after beating Mike Tyson. Did you see, by the way, also Antonio Brown, and he's something else, and I'll just leave it at that. Antonio Brown was at the fight, live streamed it on IG, I think, and 7.6 million people just tuned into Antonio Brown's live stream over their Wi-Fi or data feed and watched the fight and had no issues whatsoever, whereas everybody else was just getting a data crush. And by the way, Netflix, we appreciate you for bringing back The Office during the pandemic. The comeback was amazing. It was almost worth at least 1 or 2 months of the $15 I throw your way. Hell, I still even miss the DVDs. But did you not know that a billion people were going to watch this? Like, was there not a backup server farm? What's that, bud?
This does not bode well.
It does not. No, you are 1,000. Like, don't they have 2 Christmas Day games?
Yes. Like, that's a major issue if this is what we're going to get. Like, if this is the product we're going to receive, I am going to lose my Christmas is going to be ruined.
Well, it's also different. You know, people might want to compare it because I think the first live thing they did was the Tom Brady roast. But that's different. That's an event. This is a sport, like a sporting event where you can't screw up.
Yeah, and more people probably watched the Tom Brady thing after the live portion, right? It wasn't going to garner as many live eyes as a live sporting event. And so to see this and the buffering issues and the connectivity issues, like that does not bode well for Christmas Day.
No, it does not. And if you now considering that the average, like the Thursday night football games, the good ones have been averaging 13 to 15 million viewers, the cruddier ones even still getting 10, 11 million. And Amazon Prime, with all the Bezos money, is doing just fine with dealing with that many people online at the same time. On Christmas Day, it is the ultimate white noise. That it has dominated and taken over the NBA. If I'm not mistaken, Shime, recent NFL broadcasts on Christmas Day, be they on Amazon, Fox, CBS, etc., have been averaging in the low to mid-20s of millions of people. Netflix is going to be ready for that?
No, absolutely not. And, Fitzy, on top of that, it's not just 2 games. They're 2 awesome games. You have Chiefs-Steelers, which is looking like an AFC powerhouse matchup at this point. And then you have Ravens-Texans, which is Lamar Jackson versus C.J. Stroud. These are going to get a ton of eyes.
Yeah, you're going to get some peak viewership, especially because the present's been opened. Everyone now is debating whether or not they can keep their mouth shut and not talk politics on Christmas Day. People are planning their returns. The nog is flowing. Beverages are popping. And what do? You throw on the NFL game while you're rifling through handfuls of the Costco cashews and everything else and the port wine, cheese, and crackers that have been laid out in front of you. That's how we do in America. That's America 2024. And if Netflix isn't ready for that, oh, man. I tend to want to stay away from social media on Christmas Day and most holidays, period, because I like to give my brain and my soul a break and actually connect IRL with people I care about or the ones who at least tolerate me on holidays. Mm-hmm. But the last thing I think all of us want to do is have to pick up our phone and send out rage tweets about how Netflix service stinks on Christmas Day. So be warned, Netflix. We have, you guys now officially have, let's see, today's the 16th. You guys have 39 days to get your ish together and make sure. Figure it out, Netflix.
We got eyes on you.
You effed around last night. Now you got to figure it out. And you know what? We actually all really didn't miss much last night because it was a sham of a fight, a complete waste of time.
Yeah, it's it's a good thing they messed up on this event.
Maybe it was a forerunner. Maybe that was the entire idea, Joe Braverman. Let's figure out our mass crush streaming service platform with this garbage fight between a geriatric and Jake Paul, and then we'll get it right for Christmas Day. Dare I say also, this fight was way worse than Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, immeasurably worse. Like, it was just, like, at least those two guys were both very much in shape and at the top of their games, even though McGregor had never boxed before in his life. But, like, Mike Tyson, man, that's tough. It's tough. It's tough.
I don't know, Shyam, if you're a fan. Again, there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of hilarious tweets from last night.
Yes.
This is another one of my favorites. Shea Serrano from The Ringer, the author. This mm-hmm. is a great one. Going from the Taylor-Serrano fight, that was the fight editorial prior. Note, that's the fight prior. Going from the Taylor-Serrano fight to the Paul Tyson fight is like if you watch the Super Bowl, and then immediately after the Super Bowl, you watch two people play paper football on a table in Denny's at 3 a.m.
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
So bad.
Show me on the tweet where he's wrong. All right. Speaking of winners and losers, Shyam, I always like when we're on the 12 o'clock spot on a Saturday as we
Same.
Get to wind down the week. The high energy, the compliments. We appreciate all of you tuning in and the nice things you have to say about our high energy program. I usually enjoy at this time of the week as we look to the NFL, which basically starts or some say it ends the week. But when you get to the NFL, that kind of really begins the week anew. So let's play the old Who Won the Week Boston Sports Edition game, Shyam. You've got the Interest Kings back in action, the Bruins taking one step forward and then three huge skates back with a cracked kneecap, no less. You've got the Celtics with big victories and comebacks and then also an absolute head-scratcher on their virtual reality AI-generated court. And then you have the Patriots coming home from the Windy City preparing to take on the Ramajamas in a sneaky big one tomorrow. So, Shyam, who would you say won the week in Boston sports?
Yeah, so a large part of me actually wants to say the Red Sox just for the whole Juan Soto discussion and the meeting with Juan Soto, but I'm not going to. I'm going to say the New England Patriots. I think the return of Christian Barmore this week is just such a massive, massive thing. The Patriots are now at a point where, yes, they're underdogs in like every game, but a lot of people are very much buying into the fact that they can actually win in those games, and people that are smarter than the two of us believe that they can actually win in these games. And so for me, the winner of the week is the New England Patriots. You're going to see that defense get better this week against a Rams team that you kind of need your defense to be good against in order to win. And I think Drake May continues to become more of an icon, might be a little strong, but an icon in this city and a big name and one of the faces of this city. And the aura around Drake May continues to grow, and so I will say the Patriots are the winners of the week.
Hard to dispute as well. I can't give it to the Celtics because of that atrocious loss against the Atlanta Hawks the other night.
And that court.
And the court. You know, the court's kind of fun. I mean, these courts are wild. It's
no, thank you.
Put last year's court to the side by side with this one. I'd say this year is much better.
Put the two of them in a rocket built by Elon Musk and fire them directly at the sun and tell it not to return and land itself. I'm all set with them. The OG parquet or any version therein is good enough for me. Yeah, true. That was a head scratcher. By the way, anyone wants to sit, feel free. Sit me down like I'm 7 and explain the NBA Cup for 10 minutes if you get a chance to. I don't understand this thing. I don't feel the need for it. Now you get a trophy. The NBA mandates that you hang a banner, which everyone is immediately going to compare to the finalist banner that the Colts hung up a decade ago, which has gotten them trolled for 10 straight years. I don't get it. If this is basically engendered towards making sure that teams that usually don't win out in the playoffs or aren't going to make the NBA finals have something to brag about vis-a-vis the Lakers last year, fine, I guess, but It makes no sense to me. Shyam, I'm going to ride with you on that one. I'll go Patriots, but I'll even go more hyper-specific. Drake May, right before our very eyes, is ascending to local, if not regional, potentially national star status.
Ooh.
This kid, with his moves on field, the leadership he displayed, the story that broke out last Sunday about him not being happy in the middle of last week's practices and asking if it was cool if he addressed the team and told them to get their crap together, finally coming through after people in the locker room and reporters therein had told us that he is mild-mannered, he's not a real big speech-and-shout type of guy, he doesn't have the Brady LFG, you know, get-your-blank-together type of fire. But for him to do that, and then in the game, throw a dumb pick. I love the Alex Van Pelt line. Should have thrown that to the tuba player in the fourth row. Great line. If only Van Pelt called plays the way he drops lines at his pressers. then also, like, the running on the field, the touchdown to Polk was nice. The completion to Hunter Henry to ice it on third and one with 4 minutes left in the game. And then all week long, every soundbite and everything that he said and people said about him was so glowingly positive. He's a household name in New England, and I think you'll soon see, even in the sea of people that continue to put Flex Seal and duct tape and you know, paper mache on the back of their Mac Jones jerseys because they don't want to spend $100 to $150 on a new jersey, I think you will eventually see Drake May enter the top 10 selling NFL jerseys, because beyond how great he was at the end of that Titans game, even though that resulted in an L, you are seeing somebody do something we have never seen do in a Patriots uniform. You are seeing everything you told us we would get and that we begged for and secretly didn't realize that we wanted so badly, with his modern athleticism. And he's just a good dude. Tell your kids to like him. Tell your kids to watch him. He's bringing the kids back to the television. He's making kids love Patriots football again. And that's how a movement starts. Soon enough, people will want to come play here. People will want to be a part of the Patriots. The turnaround has officially begun. And if anyone's like, you got to lose more games, you get a draft pick, please blow it out your rear. I don't want to hear. Honest to God, I don't. If they finish 5-12, but Drake May stays upright and healthy through the season, and he's battle tested and ready to really get after it next year, watch out, man. He is literally going to make Foxborough great again. So,
well, it's crazy. You say 5-12, like, there's a possibility, there's a world where they're better than 5-12. Like, there's a world where they finish this season 7-10. I mean, you still have plenty of games here to actually win. And if you're getting guys like Barmore back, if Drake May continues to get better and improve, and the legend of Drake May continues to grow as a rookie, like, there's a chance that the rest of this organization looks back on those first 5 weeks of the season and goes, oh man, what were we doing? Wow, we could have been a playoff team. Like, this was really close. Man, Drake was way better than we thought he was. And it's just, it becomes that, you know, hindsight is 2020 game. And unfortunately, we can't, you know, you just can't live in the past. But, like, there is a world where 6 weeks from now, the Patriots are playing for their seventh win of the season against the Buffalo team that's sitting everybody because they've already locked up their playoff spot. Like, that is a realistic world at this point, Fitzy. And
you
I
can't live in the past. Don't tell that to a lot of New England that's still mad that Black Sabbath broke up.
Yeah, well, you know, get over it. It is what it is. And I mean, there's still people like Curtis who are still mad Tom Brady left. And that's gonna happen. I'm mad too. But you know what? Drake May is here, and Drake May is here to stay. And people across the nation too. It's not just like us in New England. There are people outside of New England who evaluate football on a day-to-day basis who know so much more about this sport than I will ever know, that love this kid and say this kid is awesome. And that just gives me more and more hope for the future.
Drake May season is officially here, ladies and gentlemen. Let's actually get into how we think the Patriots may do the rest of the way, as well as update people on a certain member of the New England Patriots who is here no longer. He joins a very select society of players that live in infamy in New England Patriots history, at least in the 21st century. Plus, we'll get into more of that national love on Drake May. We'll start to preview Rams at Patriots, get in depth. We'll talk about the commissioner and his zeal for more NFL games, which is too much if you ask me. A little Soto talk, the best bets of the week, and so much more. A jam-packed, pack-jammed 3 hours of Fitzy and Shyam that is now going to dovetail right into a sports update from producer extraordinaire, Joe B. Braverman.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
It sounded like you were buffering again there, Fitzy. Thank God that wasn't the case. Final injury report is out for the Patriots as they gear up for their Week 11 matchup at home with the Rams. And the big news is defensive lineman Christian Barmore in the last couple of minutes was activated off the non-football injury list. He is expected to play after recovering from blood clots over the summer. Other players that are questionable are Kyle Duggar, Daniel Okwale, Christian Ellis, Vidarian Lowe, Marte Mapu, and Dietrich Wise. On the other side for L.A., starting right tackle Rob Havenstein has been ruled out with an ankle injury, and his backup Joe Noteboom is doubtful. Also starting linebacker Byron Young is questionable. Pats and Rams kick it off from Gillette tomorrow at 1 in the afternoon. Some other roster news for the Pats. Receiver Tyquan Thornton was officially waived the 2022 second-round pick. Only had four catches on the season. It's a TD Garden doubleheader today, starting with the Bruins taking on the St. Louis Blues. Puck drop in a little less than an hour from now at 1 o'clock. We do have some roster news. Scoops Keith back at it again. He says surgery is not needed for Hampus Lindholm on his fractured kneecap. The team officially placed Lindholm on injured reserve. That game earlier today will be followed by the Celtics taking on the Toronto Raptors. Drew Holiday is questionable with knee issues, and Kristaps Porzingis remains out. He was in practice in uniform yesterday, so he's nearing his season debut. Tip-off is set for 8 o'clock. Boston College football hits the road to take on 14th-ranked SMU. That kicks off at 3:30. You can listen to John Mita-Perrell and Pete Cronin on the call right here on 93.7 WEEI-FM with coverage beginning at 3 o'clock following Fitzy and Shime. Later on tonight, you can hear Westwood One's coverage of number 7 Tennessee visiting number 12 Georgia on these same stations with coverage starting at 7. And last night in a full 8-round match, Jake Paul defeated 58-year-old Mike Tyson by unanimous decision live on Netflix in Dallas. I'm Joe Braverman, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who do you like more, Drake
Dave's
May or
troll.
Caleb Williams?
Drake May.
Dave's the one who said we should put in Tyson Bagent. I said he doesn't have arm strength.
That's not me. That's him.
Is that pre-draft? Or
Drake May is going to be a superstar. Drake May is going to be everything you're looking for. Five-star. Five-star. Bad ass. He's a horse, man. Huh?
Is he you like him over Jaden or not?
I love him.
Oh, there was a disturbance in the force when that audio leaked out. Just two short days ago. I can only imagine how nicey that got you feeling, Shime, when John Gruden, new hire and football analyst extraordinaire for Barstool Sports, that was a surprise hire, I got to say. Probably one of the better hirings or poachings they've made. Not going back to TV, not just doing his own TikToks, but rather now working on that old pirate ship.
Feeling really nicey.
Yeah, I mean, you would never think that would fit in. You would never think that worked. But hey, you know, 2024 is a hell of a drug. To hear him say that Drake May, this guy knows quarterbacks. Obviously, a curious past. There have been some issues and incidents. You can feel how you want to feel about the spider Y2 banana brain. But let me tell you straight up, this guy is a psychopath who knows, loves, eats, breathes, sleeps, and is football. And when he tells you,
what if you're with me?
And when he tells you that Drake May is going to be a superstar, you put down whatever you were about to eat, tweet, or complete, and you listen.
Yeah, somebody had alerted me to this audio, and then I saw it, and my jaw hit the floor. I started drooling a little bit too much, and I just knew that I was in good company. I was like, oh. So I wasn't the only one who noticed this before.
So now, Shime, along with Bill being on your island, Bill O'Brien, now you have John Gruden.
Yep, you're damn right. We're all on Shime Island here. There's another guy who we may get to later in the program who's also on Shime Island, who evaluates quarterbacks left, right, and center and does a hell of a good job on it. I get so excited to hear. Like you said, 50, this is a guy who lives, breathes, eats, and sleeps football. That's all he does. That's all he's ever wanted to do with his life is to just be football. And he says that he is going to be a five-star badass. That is like, that is as Patriots porn as it gets. And we haven't had much of that in the last 5 years post Tom Brady.
Yeah, how about the other night, by the way, when we were doing our usual Thursday night, pre-Thursday night football affair, all the people that called in to offer you your flowers about...
And then immediately roast me?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that you kind of have to do that. I mean,
true.
It's too easy.
It's the compliment sandwich.
Exactly. Yes, that the condiment on the compliment sandwich, of course, usually has to be the fact that people want to roast you for something or other. But that means they care. That means they love you. It's a true sign of New England. Yeah, it's truly amazing the ascension that he has made. And now when you're getting the people like the Grudens and whatever else who may or may not have been in on him prior to, saying that this guy's going to be a superstar, this isn't just sort of hyperbole to get a lot of likes or to garner favor with a new employer or make sure that you're part of you're part of people's refreshed algorithm. Like, this kid's got it. And the it factor that he has is on many levels. Like, he's got it on the field. You can see with the arm strength, the throws, the one we were talking about the other night, last Sunday against the Bears in Chicago, when he's going out of bounds and throws the football and is able to throw like a 30-yard slider that goes out of bounds and curves back inbounds. And KJ Osborne should have had it had he not actually stepped out of bounds in the end zone. That's one of the wildest throws. People talk about that throw Patrick Mahomes made in Super Bowl 54 when the Buccaneers creamed 55 when the Bucs creamed the Chiefs and the Chiefs had no offensive line. Mahomes on fourth down was going to the ground and sidearmed a dime 25 yards to the end zone that Tyreek Hill wasn't able to come up with. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a hell of a throw. I'd put this one up there with some of the greatest incompletions I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my God, yeah. He curved it like he was in the movie Wanted. Like, it was awesome. And so I continue to see more and more reasons to get excited. And a lot of people want to try and throw water on it and all his success so far because of the turnovers. And I get it. I recognize that. But I think historically, like, turnovers for young quarterbacks aren't a terrible thing because it allows you to learn what you can and can't get away with, right? It kind of allows you to experiment a little bit. I forget who it was, but years ago they talked about how good quarterbacks in practice, right, would make throws they don't normally make just to see if they can get away with it and know what they can and can't get by really good defenders. And then they kind of grade themselves on that, and then you allow yourself in a game. It's like, all right, I know I can make this throw. I know I can beat that guy. And it's no longer an experiment. It's a matter of yes or no. And it's more black and white than the gray area. And so I think Drake May, even with the turnovers that you've seen in the first few weeks, is learning and is improving. And he's the kind of player that does that. Like, this kid loves the sport. He loves football. He wants to improve. He understands what it means to play the quarterback position. And it's just really exciting for someone like myself or Patriots fans in general to watch this kid grow.
Yeah, well, there was a point earlier in the season where I think a lot of us thought, oh, man, here we go. It's tune-out time. Just let me know when they put the kid in. Like, I'm really not that interested in watching Jacoby Brissett play. This offense is a slog. They can't move the ball. And look, they have improved in yardage, and they're up 5 points a game since Drake May came in. It's not that Alex Van Pelt has dialed up some new offense. He himself admitted this week that the Patriots are having trouble fully accessing all of the playbook that he has intended for them, not because Drake May can't handle it, but because of the inconsistency on the offensive line. So, hallelujah, in PTL, they're actually going to start the same five guys again in consecutive weeks. And maybe this will end up being the offensive line that sticks, you know, knock on wood, and hopefully they're healthy the rest of the way.
Clap it up. Somebody else clap up. There we go. Appreciate you. There we go.
That's another thing, too. Like, people got all, like, butthurt about that. Like, dude, it's just, he's kind of got that.
Why did
why
did that bother people? What? Honestly,
I don't know. Fitzy, he's got like the golden retriever brain. The kid just like wants to have fun. Like he's right. just like that was 100% genuine. That wasn't him trying to like make a scene or that's just who he is. And so like I know people are like, you act like you've been
now
there
cheering
before,
in
kid.
The press
like,
box. You can't wear merchandise in the stadium if
so
you're not
dumb.
A Philly.
It's so outdated. Like relax, relax a little bit.
Yeah, there's no reason to get all up in arms about that. You know, like the tune back in factor, you know, the tune back in factor is legitimate right now. You know, the play calling hopefully will improve. You know, I we'll get into a little bit of that later on in the whole and the potential ownership overreach as far as grooming and preparing Drake May as well. But I think a lot of us are just now naturally compelled to want to see him make those mistakes. Great. Make some of those wild throws. Awesome. You're going to get a bunch of both the rest of the way. We have yet to have one of either of these things. We have yet to have that spectacular 318 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 pick, 60 rushing yard game that you know is coming and that he's very capable of. I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow. That's a pretty ferocious defensive front that he's going to have to contend with. We also have not had the 217 yards, 1 touchdown, 4 pick game. Even Brady had a couple of 4 pick games early on. He had one or two early on in his first couple of years starting for the Patriots. That's also going to happen. This is all part of the process. You have to be willing to go for the ride, for all the bumps, for all the cheers, for all the jeers, everything that's going to come with it. You have to just sort of strap in and prepare. But at least now you're seeing something. Like you're getting both a glimpse into the future. And there's a legitimate entertainment factor to the way he plays versus that militant style of borderline leatherhead football that they were playing for the first 5 games of the year.
Yeah, there's going to be some growing pains. Absolutely. And as you mentioned, Tom Brady had 2 4-interception games within his first 2 full seasons, right? It was week one in 2003 against the Bills. He had 4 interceptions. And then in 2001, he had 4 interceptions against the Denver Broncos. So like that's going to happen to anybody. And yet Drake May hasn't done that yet. And he also hasn't hit the ceiling yet. And so you're still trying to kind of find exactly where it is. And when you look at it, outside of that very first interception he threw, which he sailed on the receiver, none of the interceptions he's thrown have been like mistakes. Or like not like a mistake like that. It's not a ball that he overthrew or it wasn't a wild pitch is kind of my point, right? Right. They were just bad decisions. A lot of the time, right? The one he should have thrown to the tuba player, the other one where he hit the linebacker, I think it was two weeks ago, where linebacker kind of baited him into throwing it. He didn't see the linebacker cutting underneath it, and the linebacker just snuck right in and grabbed it. And so, like, they've been rookie mistake interceptions and not just wild, inaccurate throw interceptions. And I think that's what you should take away from it the most, because after that first game, after that first interception, everybody's like, oh, see, this is what we warned you about. There's going to be so many of those because he has such bad footwork and he's not as clean with his pocket presence. And that's just not accurate. It's just not true. Like those wild throws don't happen that often. It's just rookie mistake interceptions that he's making.
Meanwhile, texters like on the 781 who says May should have 12 interceptions already.
Yeah, good for him. Patrick Mahomes should have
12 interceptions. Yeah,
like who?
Mahomes always leads the league every year in number and like interceptions dropped or interceptions that didn't come to completion, if you will.
Yeah, that happens. Like when you throw the ball a lot and you have to, in Drake May's case, throw into a lot of tight windows because your receivers don't get that much separation. There are gonna be times where it looks like there probably should be some interceptions. And like a couple of times on those should be interceptions were miscommunications with the receivers, which only get better with time. And so I just like I have zero.
And they won't have receivers like Tyquan Thornton.
Yeah, true. Like and
what a
and,
segue, Joe. Great job.
Yeah, it's nice to see that the Patriots have actually kind of thinned out that receiver room. 7 guys on the roster was too many.
Yeah, you know how we used to always say, or it was a talking point, I want to say maybe back in 2022 during the beginning of the dysfunction that heralded the end of the Belichick era and the reverse engineered offense of Patricia and Judge. I used to always at least say, you know, I would love to see if you would just drop Mac Jones into a situation where they had offensive line continuity and consistency and a stud receiver or two. What would it look like? Would he look like Mac Jones his senior year at Alabama? or would he continue to look like the intermittently talented, sometimes incredibly frustrating, petulant, you know, tennis brat that he kind of showed himself to be later on? And it was a sad ending, and now things are not going well for him in Jacksonville, and I'm never going to like... Yeah, he kind of stinks right now at this point, but the Pats kind of also helped break him, and it's part of it is his own attitude as well. You know, for the texter out there saying, like, he should have 12 interceptions right now, or like, oh, yeah, settle down, you two homers. Yeah, yeah, so let's quit fitting him for his yellow jacket next to his bronze bust in Canton. We're not telling you that he's the best quarterback in the NFL. I heard you earlier on the crossover with Ken and Curtis saying he's, like, in the mid to upper teens potentially right now. That feels accurate. I would say that feels to say he's the
18th
best.
And Ken even ran through the other quarterbacks. And like Curtis and I were in agreement on every single one.
Yeah. I'd say he's about the 18th best quarterback now. This is, again, with an offensive line that has two people they picked up off of waivers that weren't even on the flipping team before they started the season, that being your center and your right tackle, and with wide receivers, of which I don't know if any of them besides Pop Douglas and Kayshon Boutte would be on another NFL team.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. They wouldn't even be on a team, let alone be a starter.
They couldn't trade him. They tried to trade KJ Osborne and Kendrick Osborne and Tyquan Thornton, and people were like, let me see. Do we have any eighth round picks? No, I guess not. Sorry. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it, though. And thus you end up with this, and we'll go to break momentarily with this. If people hadn't heard, it was in Joe's Trending. It was announced earlier on the Ken and Curtis show. But the Patriots have moved on from Tyquan Thornton. I made sure to go back and find and retweet my tweet earlier that I shared from, let me see, when did this one aged beautifully. April 29th, 2022. Shortly after complaining on draft night about the pick and how that is not a receiver that I wanted the New England Patriots to draft, and I didn't like the way that these long, lanky, fast Baylor receivers translated to the NFL, I tweeted on draft night that I hated the pick. I got back in typical, just probably because it's me fashion, so much hate that night. It was unbelievable. What do you know? Why don't you give the kid a chance? You suck. Whatever. This kid's so, oh yeah, 4.28 speed's not going to translate, bro. They need someone to take the top off. Okay, so the next day, later that night, I tweet out, let us hope Tyquan Thornton can move past any second-round receiver curses of Patriots past and become the burner Mac Jones and this offense needs. And what happened, Scheim? 2.5 years later, I think after like 40-some-odd catches, several hundred yards, maybe like 2 touchdowns, and an entirely forgettable tenure in New England, Tyquan Thornton has just been flat-out released. So I ask you this. Earlier this season, we jested about the captain's patch C on Pat's jerseys being a curse, like it was It Follows or a Final Destination movie. What is up with the New England Patriots across all disciplines, with all personnel directors, not being able to draft a receiver in the second round? And if you're Jalen Polk right now, are you home sweating, wondering if the curse is coming for you next?
Fitzy, forget about in the second round. Outside of the seventh round, they can't draft receivers. Like, they just can't do it. This team can't draft receivers, period. It's brutal. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just an inherent evaluation thing, right? Belichick never really valued the position, especially because Tom Brady just made other people better around him. And there was a point in time where he really didn't need to worry about it, right? Because right around the middle of Brady's career, he went and traded for Randy Moss and Wes Welker, and those guys were awesome. And then he drafted Gronk, so it's like, well, we have a number one receiver. He just plays tight end. And we also just kind of stumbled into Julian Edelman, which is probably, again, more a product of Tom Brady than it was Bill Belichick. And so I look at that, and I'm like, well, this organization has never had to seriously evaluate receiver talent because Tom Brady just masked that. And then the guys that they have in charge of evaluating talent right now were all Belichick guys. So, of course, they don't know how to evaluate receiver talent because it was just never prioritized in this organization. And I think that's where the issue lies, is they need to go out and find a couple guys who are legitimately good at evaluating receiver talent. You look at the Steelers. They hit on receivers all the bleeping time, it feels like. They, like, never miss.
You have a team coming to Foxborough this weekend, Scheim. Pardon me for stepping on your toes, but you have a team coming to Foxborough this weekend who is phenomenal at evaluating and developing receivers.
Cooper Forget Kupp, that. They're excellent at evaluating mid-round talent across the board. I mean, half their defensive line is all mid-round guys that they've nailed on.
And laughing at you when you take a mid-round guard in the first round.
Exactly. Like, it's just, this team needs an over a complete overhaul on how they evaluate draft talent.
Like, is it possible the Patriots can just scour the waivers or just contact, you know, the same way that you can go in the NFL to another team's practice squad and sign a player off of there to your roster, just like por ejemplo, the same way that the Chiefs went and who plucked, oh, the Browns plucked Bailey Zappe off the Chiefs practice squad. Correct. After the Pats released him. Then the Chiefs just went and pulled that brilliant move and took the Jets backup kicker, who they kept reverting to the practice squad when Greg the Dregs was injured this season. And so when Harrison Butker went down so he could go home and have his wife make sandwiches for him, then the Chiefs go to the practice squad of the Jets and take their kicker and screw the Jets, which was just so wonderful. So quintessentially Jets as well. You know, is there no way the Patriots can go find someone else in a personnel department that has worked with Steelers receiver evaluators, Rams receivers evaluators, and bring them to town? Because this is just something that the Groves and the Wolfs and the everybody's, the Belichicks, they've just screwed it up, period. Like you said, unless they're in the sixth or the seventh round, like Jacoby Myers or Pop Douglas or Julian Edelman, and that ain't much, they just can't pick receivers, period.
No, they can't, and it bugs the crap out of me that they haven't looked outside of their organization, outside of the people they know, to find a guy who actually understands how to evaluate receiver talent. Like, they never have. I don't know what it is, what their objection is to finding talented receivers, but, I mean, teams across the league are doing it, and you're not, and that's one of the reasons you're so far behind.
617-779-7937 is your telephone number. When we come back here on the old FNS 50 and Shine program, we will start getting into tomorrow's matchup at 1 o'clock with Matt Stafford and Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp and the very talented Los Angeles Rams coming off of a difficult defeat themselves on Monday Night Football to town against the Patriots. Do they represent the kind of game that will help the Patriots get on a winning streak, or could they be in for a rude awakening at Foxborough? We'll be back with that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. It's Fitzy and Shime on EEI.
I was reading some of the clippings from the local press and even just the media, and I heard some of them saying that in their minds, and obviously this is their opinion, that they feel like the Patriots got the better quarterback and the better leader. What comes to mind when you hear things like that?
Oh, I think it's an honor to hear that, and hopefully the guys and the people in this building feel that way. That's the goal coming out of it. But at the end of the day, I know Caleb's a great player, and he's got a bright future ahead of him. So looking forward to hoping some more matchups down the road. But I'm just trying to do everything I can to worry about being the best player for the Patriots, and at the end of the day, being the best person on and off the field here in Boston.
I mean, if you were Stacey James, if you were Gerard Mayo, Alex Van Pelt, or Chris Scheim, the May Whisperer, you wouldn't have been able to script a better reply. And that was Drake May on Josina Anderson, the debut of her new podcast, which everyone was clamoring for earlier this week. I rarely enjoy when she tweets out these breaking bits of news. But I was just dying for a podcast. Anyway, so that reply was absolutely perfect. I mean, he has a chance to like pump his own tires, or maybe get a little hyperbolic, or just give the media a little bit of what they want. And instead, it's I'm the fourth of the four giant brothers. I'm just a humble aw shucks kid from down south. Unless this is a facade and we're all getting played, I really don't think it is. This is what people continue to say about him. Then that was just another something that along the way, Shime, as Drake May has continually issued tests. That's another one that he nailed.
Yeah, 100%. Like you couldn't have scripted that any better for him. He's just concerned about the people in the building. He's like, I hope they feel that way. I'm just going to keep doing what I do. And that's exactly what he should be doing. That's exactly how he should be focused. And that's exactly what we want to hear as Patriot fans, because that means this guy is locked in. He's ready to go. He doesn't have any like the grand thoughts about himself. He just wants to go out and win football games, man. And I think that is kind of overlooked at times. That's all he cares about, is winning football games, however it's done.
Is that so wrong? He just wants to win a couple of
games. That's the mindset we loved from Tom Brady for 20 years. And it's like, oh, wow, it's refreshing to have a guy that all he wants to do is win football games. That's all he cares about. It doesn't matter who's coaching him, who's on the field with him. I mean, he played with a bad crew of players at UNC. Doesn't matter. Still goes out and slings the rock, has a good time, and just wants to win football games. It's all he cares about.
Yep, that's all, and that's all we need him to care about. And Amen. He has a very big football game starting tomorrow, 1 o'clock at the Razor. So, Shime, for people unfamiliar with the Rams beyond Stafford, Kupp, and Nacua, you know,
and
Kyren Williams, the running back, you know, that's an impressive running back. That's a quarterback who, despite, you know, being at the top of his game for 15 years and a Super Bowl champion, continues to somehow, if not be underrated, overlooked perhaps. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can sort of outline for the people like why this may be a more difficult matchup for the Patriots than expected for those of us who only know the Rams from the fantasy football players.
Yeah, so I think I'm going to start with their offensive line. They've had some issues this season. They've had some guys who haven't been healthy, but they're starting to get healthier. Steve Avila and Jonah Jackson, their two inside guys, center and guard, are healthy now and playing pretty well. Alaric Jackson, their left tackle's been all right. And then they've had an issue now with Rob Havenstein, the right tackle is out of this game, and then their backup right tackle is doubtful. So the offensive line is relatively healthy, but not entirely healthy. So that there, it could be a way for the Patriots to take advantage. But the big thing with this Rams team is their defensive front. Guys like Braden Fisk and Jared Verse out of Florida State have been awesome as rookies. These guys have crushed, and then they've been playing alongside guys who have are still trying to make a name for themselves, have been mid-round draft picks that the Rams have really kind of coached up and surprised people last year and have continued to develop in guys like Kobe Turner and Byron Young, who's actually questionable for tomorrow's game, and then Bobby Brown III in the interior. So this defensive front for the Rams is good, and they make it a lot easier for the secondary, who I think is gettable. I don't think Kobe Durant and Cam Curl are all that good in the Rams secondary. I think they're fine, but I think it's covered a lot by how good this front is. And so the Patriots are going to have to deal with a lot of pressure, and that's going to be incumbent on Drake May to really be mobile in this game, whether it's through bootlegs or simply using his legs to escape pressure. That is going to be essential to having success on offense.
Yeah, Jared Verse is proving to be
probably going to awesome. Be the rookie of the year on defense.
On defense. And, you know, even though Les Snead, the general manager of the Los Angeles Rams, was famous for saying F them picks, once they finally got a first round pick back, they nailed it. Chapter and verse, this kid is an absolute stud. Did you know that the Rams, in doing my research for the Sunday 7, my weekly Patriots news and notes column at WEI.com, the Rams have, I believe, the 22nd ranked overall defense, a little better against the run, definitely can be thrown on. They give up a lot of yards in the air. So if May has the time, then he can find some soft spots, and hopefully his receivers will actually be in the correct spots and hold on to the ball. However, the Rams lead the NFL in strip sacks with 7, yes, 6 of which they have converted. So there's your chess match for tomorrow, at least as far as when the Patriots' offense is on the field and the Rams' defense is up against them. Can this makeshift patchwork offensive line that is starting for the second time 2 weeks in a row, they did it week 7 and 8, and now they're doing it weeks 10 and 11. Left tackle Vidarian Lowe, left guard Michael Jordan, center Ben Brown, right guard Mike Owenu, right tackle Demontre Jacobs. Can they handle the pressure that will be generated by Jarrett Verse and the sneaky good Braden Fisk out of Florida State, who I absolutely had the biggest combine crush on? I would say the only person that had the only player I had a slightly larger combine crush on, and it was by a tad, McConkie, was that receiver out of Georgia as well. This kid is great. Like, he is a pocket wrecker, and he is a gap penetrator, and the Patriots are going to have their handful tomorrow. So this is where Alex Van Pelt is going to have his hands full as well.
I think that's where you hit on it, Fitzy. I think it's going to be more on Van Pelt than the offensive line to really kind of scheme up some opportunities here.
And let's get into the Van Pelt question, Shime. Excellent. Let's get into that whole thing now, because You had this week, you had some positive pieces generated towards
sure.
Alex Van Pelt because of the work he is doing with Drake May, which I believe to be priority and task number one for him this season. But people are still doubting and getting frustrated by the play calling as well. The responses to the positive pieces were negative, but that's, of course, just very New England and Pats fan, I guess. He responded to the story that the ownership of the New England Patriots may be going outside the organization, outside FAW 95 in the Northeast Corridor, to find out if they're grooming and developing him the right way. It does seem a bit of an overreach. Let's get into that and how people feel about the Patriots scheme and what Alex Van Pelt is going to have to do tomorrow to help the Patriots achieve victory when we come back. And, of course, the lines are open for you at 617-779-7937. It's Fitzy and Chime and you on a Saturday on EEI.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.